thirst for God. We have as human persons a voracious thirst, and everybody has it. And a human being is alive intellectually and volitionally, mind and will, to the extent that this individual wonders. Because a communion with God is not independent of how we live. And so also, if we want this deep immersion with God, we've got to live a certain lifestyle. Welcome to Prayer Quest. I'm Father Thomas Duvet, Marist Priest. Wonder and human enrichment. If you have been with us since the beginning of Prayer Quest, you will have noticed that there's been a great deal of emphasis on the beauty of the human person. Divinization, transformation, Scripture has called it. And I got this idea not from my own head. I have it, of course, from divine revelation. God has great plans for you and me, and He wants to transform us in Himself. And that is our prayer quest. We might begin with the question, what is wonder? I have three very brief definitions, and I want to illustrate the first one especially. Wonder is a vibrant response to reality. The visible universe is absolutely awesome. I've dabbled in scientific things all of my life, from teens until the present day, and I have yet to read about anything in the visible universe that is less than astonishing. Absolutely everything. One example. At this very moment, there are tiny, tiny particles called neutrinos that are passing through rapidly by the billions every single moment right through your body. And you don't feel them, neither do I. These neutrinos are so small they can go right through a brick, touch nothing. They can go through a ton of lead, touch nothing. They can go through the whole earth and probably touch nothing at all. As a matter of fact, you might not believe it, but they can go through 10 light years of concrete. If you had concrete 10 light years thick, they would go right through it, that vast piece of concrete, without stopping. Now, a light year, you know, is the distance light travels in 1 year, going at about 186,000 miles a second. It goes around the earth in about 1 second, I think it is. Anyhow, whatever it is, it's very fast. I forget the exact number at the moment. But if you had something concrete as thick as it would take light 10 years to go through, these neutrinos can pass right through without stopping. Now, that is an amazing sort of thing. And a normal human person will be astonished at it. That is wonder. How could that possibly be? A second definition of wonder: being fully alive. Fully alive. You'll notice in summertime, when there's been a rain on a warm afternoon, at least I have noticed it where I come from, that the rain falls and then the sun comes out, and worms have come out onto the sidewalk, the concrete, or the pavement. And I've noticed that it doesn't take very long before they start retreating back into their habitat. If you come upon a worm that's been outside in the sun, and it's all dry in that area, and the worm's still there, you wonder if it's still living. And I know I have just touched it with the tip of my toe, the shoe, to see if it's alive. Because responding to reality is a sign of life. And so if the worm moves when I have touched it, that tells me it's still living. If it doesn't move, I conclude probably dead. Well, in the human situation, we are alive when we respond to reality in a similar manner, not the same, of course. A third definition of wonder: an awesome awareness. We're just filled with awe. And I want to talk about that in this particular segment. And first I want to ask the question, why should we wonder? You might even wonder yourself, what does this have to do with prayer life? It has quite a lot to do with it. Because the more alive we are as human beings, the more inclined we're going to be toward awe, wonder, amazement, praise. And when it's centered on God, that is a type of prayer. In any event, why should we wonder? Obviously, I've answered that already in one way. Namely, if we are going to be human beings fully alive, we have got to wonder, or to the extent that we don't, we're more or less dead. Everything of God's handiwork, both in nature and in supernature, is marvelous. And I'm not overstating the case. As a matter of fact, if anything, we don't have a word strong enough to put the reality before our minds. Everything is amazing. Just let me take just one grain of sand and let's wonder about it a little bit. Not only that it's made up of atoms and these amazingly small particles, some atomic particles, but the distance between nothing and a grain of sand is an infinite distance. And even if nothing else existed but a grain of sand, there would have to be God. Because from nothing, you get nothing. And if a grain of sand appears where nothing was, you've got to have an infinite power. A grain of sand is an amazing thing for what it is and the gap between it and nothing at all. Let me take for a little closer look, take an example of a wonder-filled reality, a living cell. And by a living cell, I mean not only some cell in your skin, not only some cell in your earlobe or your eye, all kinds of amazingly different types of cells, but I mean a cell that part of a blade of grass or a flower. A cell is so marvelous that if you were to magnify it, and I'm here summarizing the thought of a microbiologist, if you were to magnify a cell of a blade of grass or at the tip of your finger 1,000,000,000 times, you would make it about the size of New York City. And to get the amazement of that cell, you would, and here is my summary of the microbiologist, you would find in that cell millions of openings and closings. Now that already just blows my mind. That something so small you can't even see it could have even 5 portholes opening and closing would be amazing. This cell has millions of them. Astonishing. And you would enter one of the portholes and you would find a world of supreme technology, says this microbiology. There would be a central memory bank. There are assembly plants. There are processing units. There is a kind of railway system in the cell. There are machines that we cannot even make in our big world. They're so complex, we can't make them. I am looking right now at a camera, which is very complex, I suspect. But the machines that we have in a cell, we can't even make. And we can make cameras, television cameras, of course, as well as ordinary ones. This microbiologist, whose name, by the way, is Michael Denton, wrote, and I quote, "You've got a factory in a cell larger than a city and carrying out almost as many unique functions as all the manufacturing activities of man on Earth." That is almost incredible. That in one of these little cells, in a blade of grass, one of trillions of cells is more complex than practically all the manufacturing activities on the face of the earth. And if you want one more amazing thing about the cell, I'm certainly not exhausting the subject here, but a cell can make another cell in just a matter of a few hours, which would be like saying that New York City can make in 3, 4, 5 hours another whole New York City with all of its machines and all its technology. New York can make another New York in an afternoon. That is astonishing. A third example of a source of wonder, if one is really alive. I have said these things to some people, and they seem not to be impressed at all. They kind of say, oh, is that so? And that reminds me, and they get off into another subject. I don't know how alive they are, really, but I'm afraid about it. The incarnation, I'm jumping now to a supernatural level. I've used natural examples, the neutrinos, the living cell. I'm jumping now to the supernatural order, which dwarfs anything in the natural sphere. The incarnation, that God would become one of us. It blows one's mind, or it should. If we're really alive, it just blows one's mind. The preface, one of the prefaces during the Advent season in the liturgy, preparing for Christmas, makes the remark that as Christmas approaches, we be, quote, filled with wonder and praise. Notice the connection between wonder and prayer, and therefore wonder and prayer quest, that we be filled with wonder and praise. That is our first reason why wonder. Our second reason is that wonder is a complement to God, because He, the supreme wonder, absolutely baffles any created mind. He has made all the wonders that are so amazing. And when we are astonished at His handiwork, we are giving Him, paying Him a compliment that is utterly due Him. In St. Paul's letter to the Ephesians, in chapter 2, verse 10, we read, "We are God's work of art, created in Christ Jesus, to live the good life, as from the beginning He had meant us to live it." We, human beings, are the pinnacle of visible creation. St. Thomas Aquinas, genius of a mind, he said this centuries ago. Science is now saying it again today. For instance, Denton, when speaking, the microbiologist, when speaking of the marvels of an individual cell in a blade of grass or an oak tree, he says that this individual cell, marvelous as it is, quote, nothing when compared with a system like our human brain. The human brain is the most complex, marvelous thing in visible creation. And that's the kind of saying in a scientific way what St. Thomas said a long time ago theologically. Wonder is therefore a compliment to God. Just as if you bake a delicious cake and somebody is not only pleased with it, but marvels how a cake could have these qualities, you are complimented. You're pleased. Somebody's wondering about your handiwork. The third reason why we should wonder is that it triggers prayer. It's not the only trigger, that is the marvels of God's creation. The marvels of the supernatural order, as I've said, are far greater. But it does trigger prayer, and should trigger prayer. In Psalm 119, verse 18, we read, "Open my eyes that I may see the marvels of your law." Notice the psalmist supposes that we are more or less closed, blind. And we are. I know I have gone years in my life, and still it's true of me. I'm talking about wonder, but I don't wonder nearly enough. I wonder somewhat, and I hope I grow in it, but we do tend to be blind to wonders. You can just ask yourself, have you ever wondered about a dandelion? It's an amazing thing, a dandelion is. That there should be color in the universe is amazing. God could have made an entirely gray universe, black and white, gray, nothing more, but He didn't. The fourth reason that we should wonder is that we're enriched in it. Obviously, a person who wanders is immensely richer than one who does not. G.K. Chesterton, one of my heroes, in one of his letters to Frances, who was going to become his wife, makes this remark. And Chesterton wondered more than anybody I have met in the flesh, that's for sure. And here's what he said to his wife. "I do not think there is anyone who takes quite such a fierce pleasure in things being themselves as I do. The startling wetness of water excites and intoxicates me. The fieriness of steel, the steeliness of the fieriness of fire, the steeliness of steel, the unutterable muddiness of mud. He was just thrilling with all these traits of created realities. It is just the same with people. When we call a man manly or a woman womanly, we touch the deepest philosophy. There's a man that can really wonder. And finally, on this one score, I'd like to share another little passage to another letter he wrote to Francis. It has always been one of my unclerical sermons to myself, that remark which Peter made on seeing the vision of a single hour, he's referring to the Transfiguration, ought to be made by all of us in contemplating every panoramic change in the long vision we call life. Other things superficially, but this always in our depths. And what we ought to repeat is, it is good for us to be here. It is good for us to be here, repeating itself eternally. He had a vivid sense of how alive we ought to be with reality, spelled with a small r, but even more with a capital R, God Himself. We take a little break now, and we're going to begin with our next section, so stay with us. Pretty sure that 99% of the viewers at this moment have not heard a talk even close to what we're going to be doing in this segment of our discussion, Prayer Quest. Not that I have any great title to saying unusual things, but it's just a subject that is not discussed. And yet, it's about as basic as one can get in human life. We've already touched on some pretty basic things in the first segments of our series, but this is another one, and it's going to be a rather long one. Leisure, work, and fulfillment. And I should like to begin by inviting you to use your imagination with me. And suppose I mention several different activities, many of which you have already done. Enthrallment in a gorgeous sunset, or in a clear sky at night, dark countryside, the starry sky, you've gazed upon it, or listening to classical music of first-rate quality, Beethoven or Mozart, or looking in awe at a crystal, or a wordless visit to the Blessed Sacrament in church, or the celebration of the liturgy, or finally, the last activity I want to mention, the beatific vision, that final seeing Father, Son, and Spirit, one God, just as they are. Now, what in common do all of these activities have, whether it is the gorgeous sunset you're looking at, or the starry sky, or listening to Beethoven, or celebrating liturgy, or in awe at the crystal? What do these things all have in common with that final example, beatific vision? What they have in common is they are all examples of leisure. And our first task here in discussing this area of our whole series is to get a clear idea of what leisure is. And to do that, I'm going to contrast it with work. Not that there is opposition between the two, but they are very different, and both of them must be part of ordinary human life. First, let me get rid of a few misunderstandings. By leisure here, I do not mean simply time off, People sometimes use it that way. I don't have to work today. I'm at leisure. Well, they might be at leisure, maybe, but not necessarily. So that leisure is not simply not working, having time off. Nor is leisure the same thing as recreation. Recreation is good. We need it. Some types of leisure certainly would be recreating of the human person, yes, but they're not necessarily the same thing, especially if people will call recreation something that would be more accurately termed amusement. And I'm not belittling amusement either. I'm just saying that these things are all really different realities. And surely leisure, as we're using the term, is not goofing off or idleness or a wasting of time. If you have that in your mind, that is not what we're talking about. So, what we have to do here, if we really want to understand this aspect of human life, all we've said so far in our initial segments of Prayer Quest, and to understand what we're doing now and what we're coming to later, we've got to have a clear idea of what leisure is. We've already indicated what it isn't. There are two ways of getting to a concept. One is to start with a definition and then explain the definition. The other way is to start with examples of a thing and then compare it with something else, with some more examples, and then after you see the differences, you can then end up with a very clear definition that can be extremely rich. I'm going to use this second approach to get the idea of leisure, and it's easy. You don't have to be a philosopher to understand this. Though the question is somewhat philosophical, it can be put in very simple terms. What I'm going to do here is to get to a concept of what leisure is. Most of us know what work is, though we could know much more about work as a concept. But I'm interested mostly in leisure and fulfillment. And work also contributes to fulfillment, but that's not our main accent at the moment. Now, what I'm going to do is contrast activities we call work with activities that we call leisure, and notice several things about them. And let's take as examples of work what everybody would admit, someone on an assembly line putting together the parts of a car. Or another example, a different kind of work, selling insurance. A salesman selling insurance is doing a kind of work. Quite different from putting a car together. But everybody admits they are types of work. So I'm going to consider those examples and then compare them with what leisure is. And let's take as our examples of leisure listening to Mozart, gorgeous music, and just looking at a leaf. The marvels of a leaf with all these intricate veins. And if you hold the leaf up to the sun, you'll be amazed at the beauty of it. Any leaf I've looked at, anyhow. And just looking at them or listening to Mozart as contrasted with the assembly line and selling insurance. That's what we will do. And I want to show you how different they are. Then when we see the differences, we'll be ready to have our definition and then relate it to all kinds of other things that relate and have definite bearing on our pursuit of God. Work. The first difference between work and leisure is that work produces something. Notice with the assembly line, the men or women who are putting the parts together on the car, the same bolts all day long, whatever it happens to be, they are producing cars, obviously. The insurance salesman is producing a policy that should help a family and also help the insurance company too, you see, but they're producing something, even if it's not as tangible as the car. Now you'll notice in leisure that you are producing nothing. Really what you're doing at leisure is drinking reality, which is immensely important. Remember, we're so incomplete as human beings. We talked about that in our first segment and the second one too. Incarnated thirst we are. We've got to be completed by reality, mostly by God, but even by created things. And we've got to drink reality. So in work, we produce things. In leisure, we don't produce, but we're enriched. We drink reality. The second difference, in work, you have activity, movement, doing. So the person working on the cars is obviously active, got to put the bolts on, is moving all the while, is doing things. The person listening to Mozart is receptive, resting, being. Important difference. We need both in human life. We need to do things, make things, because of who we are. But we also need to be receptive, resting, and being. And when one just is amazed at this leaf, that person is being much more richly than when not doing it. And so also listening to the beautiful music. The third difference between work and leisure is that work is a means to an end. It is justified by something else. It is utilitarian, to use a fancy word, so that when the person is putting the bolts on the car, he is simply doing something for some other purpose, which namely is car and transportation. You never find, I trust, a person just putting bolts to put bolts. I've never met that individual. I think he's got a problem if he does it. Work is aimed as a means to producing something to bring us to an end, whereas leisure is done for its own sake. Just as we love for its own sake, you don't love another in order that something. If somebody says to you, I love you in order that, you can be sure it's not love. Love is its own justification. You do it for its own sake, and that's typical also of leisure. Notice how humans have got to be at leisure to be fully human. Therefore, leisure is super useful. It is so valuable that it's more valuable than useful means to an end. We'll continue at this point next time. There's still a good bit to notice about these two. God bless you.